Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next, you need the team to act on feedback fast. So you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/retro now for a free business plan trial to unlock advanced retro tools like private mode, voting, and two-way Jira syncing. That's Miro.com/retro now.
Well, now it's time for our Friday.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Day Forum, and we're joined by Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times, by Jennifer Whitmore, Social Democratic TD for Wicklow, spokesperson for Climate, Environment and Biodiversity, Colin Brophy, Fine Gael TD for Dublin South West, chairperson of the European Affairs Committee. Good morning, one and all, and welcome. Let's start with, I suppose, the overnight breaking news that Thornton Hall might be used to set up some sort of a tented city. Colin.
Yes, well, I think that is a very welcome development. I think what it has been needed. And I think one of the things that is good to see is, particularly since Simon Harris became Taoiseach, is that there's now very much a much more whole of government approach led by the Taoiseach, which is moving things along at the speed and rate which they need to be moved along. And I think that is to be welcomed. And I think there's part of a range of solutions.
Does that mean that your previous leader, Leo Varadkar, was remiss in this regard? I put that to Simon Harris when he was with us in the studio the other morning, and he chose not to address that particular question.
I don't think it's a case of whether Leo was remiss or not. But what I think it is that there's a clear indication that under Simon Harris's Taoiseachship, that there is a much more integrated approach. And what you're seeing is a coming together of different strands of government, the work that Roger O'Gorman is doing, and you're seeing actually a stepped up approach. And that has been needed because our numbers have been going up. And it is vital, I think, that to prevent so many of the harms that we see in Irish society that are coming about at the moment in terms of this type of violent protest, this situation which none of us would like to see, I think we'll be talking about it later, that issues like accommodation, that issues like providing solutions, that issues like addressing how we deal with the entire problem in its totality are addressed. And I think that you've seen that from government in that there have been a range of proposals, not just in terms of emergency accommodation, but the provision of more permanent accommodation and in terms of looking at the whole processing.
Okay, we have a situation. So a tented village is removed from the IPAS centre and one springs up on the Grand Canal. It is removed from the Grand Canal and barriers are put up and then another tented village springs up. I mean, this is not going to go away.
Well, I think it can go away when you actually have the provision of substantial accommodation in serviced lands, which will actually give an accommodation point and then the ability to provide more permanent accommodation in the future. But I think once you have that, then you have the ability to say, look, this is the accommodation area. And that's what you're seeing with Thornton Hall, and that's what you're seeing in terms of the
government. Going to see, now we're told that we'll have up to 30,000 people looking for asylum this year. Are we going to see 30,000 people in tents in Thornton Hall?
I think, well, at any given time, there's people going through the system at various
very
points.
Very slowly.
And the system at the moment is slow, but I think it is speeding up. And I think what you'll have to see is intermediate solutions, which may involve tented accommodation and more permanent solutions being developed in terms of accommodation and how that is provided.
Jennifer.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think what we're not seeing is those permanent solutions. And we've been calling for them in the Dáil for the last 2 years. You know, the 6 reception centres were to be built. That's what's been estimated as being required. And we're not seeing any movement on those. And I think that's something like until we see those long-term sustainable solutions put in place, we're going to continue with this sort of sticky plaster approach.
But here we have a situation where our direct provision centres are full, with people who already have permission to stay here. So you build reception centres, they fill up and people stay there. They don't get moved on.
And look, at the, we do absolutely have to deal with the housing crisis as well, because it all does play a part of it. You know, I mean, it is, it does all feature. But I think what we've had to date is an absence of any form of long-term solutions from government. And what that has done is meant that our dealing of asylum seekers has been inhumane. And actually, you know, the solutions put to communities have also been very difficult and have caused problems. And in the absence of those long-term solutions, there's this narrative, the far right and very bad actors have the space to come in and start using you know, this lack of governance as own agenda. And I
just
think
to clarify, because the opposition are great at recommending Baggot Street Hospital as the usual solution. Every week they come in and say, use Baggot Street Hospital, which would, you know, remove a tented village, one. And you're getting a tented village of people arriving every single week. So what is the permanent solution then?
So I think the first thing that the government has to do is an audit of the current Ukrainian and IPAS provision, because it was reported in the media maybe 2 months ago at this stage that there was approximately 5,000 empty beds that the state was paying for and were not being used. We, the Social Democrats, have repeatedly called for that audit to be conducted, and the government is refusing to do it. So, you know, I think that's the first thing. What accommodation do we have and why are we not using it?
Where are those empty beds? The 5,000 empty beds?
5,000. I think there was 2,800 in the Ukrainian accommodation system and 2,000, I can't quite remember.
Yeah,
over 2,000.
But are they people's holiday homes or are they?
No. So at one stage in City West, there was reports that there was, you know, one room that had 40 beds that were empty. Now, I don't know if that's still the case. I mean, this was a number of months ago, but we haven't seen that audit of the existing accommodation. I think that's the first thing that the government need to be doing. And they do need also, the reception centres need to be built. We need to know when they're going to begin, where they're going to be. And to be honest, Pat, the reason Baggot Street Hospital keeps on coming up is because it does seem like an obvious solution. I mean, the government has repeatedly said that they would look at state-owned empty premises and actually retrofit those. And we haven't seen any movement on that either.
Jack.
Mm. Well, Thornton Hall, right? Thornton Hall has been pinging around the system for more than a year, probably more than that. But the first reported example of Thornton Hall was last March, when it was went to cabinet, and it was amongst a bunch of sites that have been discussed for the accommodation of refugees and asylum seekers.
Presumably, it was rejected at that time. It must have been.
No, it wasn't. I mean, it was
just mentioned.
It was mentioned, and it seems to, as I say, have just been pinging around the system with nobody really putting an ownership stamp on it. I think initially it was supposed to be for modular homes and now it's for tents, but I suppose it goes to further the sense and the impression that there's been a kind of lack of impetus. Our old friend joined up thinking and people working in silos seems to have been rearing its head here, there and everywhere. So that's, I think, the first question around, you know, why has it taken so long to actually move this into the fast lane, even though it does seem to be in the fast lane. Now, the other thing is that while you have kind of, you know, high profile examples like this, because everyone kind of knows Thornton Hall, and talking about a super prison is very kind of attractive. People understand that, you know, but the strategy, right, the strategy underpinning this, we have a new long term comprehensive accommodation strategy. It took ages to wrangle through. Cabinet approved it a couple of weeks ago, but the day-to-day experience of this hasn't changed, and I don't think is going to change for some time. We hear about these kind of larger centres that are going to be established. Nobody knows where they are yet. And Roderick O'Gorman himself has said, look, for at least a couple of years to come, the day-to-day experience of this is still going to rely on contracting out private accommodation for some time to come. So even though we've heard talk of kind of a step change and an overhaul, I don't think that, you know, the lived experience, so to speak, is changing that much. Okay. And the other thing that I think is really important is, even though there's a lot of resources going into the International Protection Office in the Department of Justice, and some countries are going a lot quicker in terms of turnaround times, that problem is very mercurial. It shifts around. When it's not one country, it's the other. And the overall numbers of people are still getting higher and higher and higher. So while you might be effective at tackling one kind of subset of problems within the overall problem at any one time, the overall problem is still enormous.
So we are addressing the symptom at the moment, which is people arriving largely, it would appear, according to Helen McEntee, over 90%. It was 80% of the Taoiseach poo-pooed that figure, but then it to cabinet was told over 90% were arriving across the border. So how do you address the cause, not the symptom? The symptom is a tented village here, there, or yon. The cause is an open border.
Well, I think fundamentally, actually, the cause is international migration and the world
sure,
in which we
yeah,
now
you,
live
you
in.
Can go back
so
to
people are on the move. We probably have the, I think I heard earlier on in your show, you know, talking about migration figures on a global basis. They're some of the highest the world has ever seen. And every country has to devise a system that works for it. So what we are putting in place, and it's a combination of solutions, which is not just the emergency accommodation solution, but also overhauling. And I take what Jack says, that the problem changes all the time, but that requires responses to change all the time. And whether people, no matter which way they arrive into the country, the key thing is, which we're doing now, is a firm system of processing, which sees people, gives people who are genuinely entitled to remain that opportunity to make their case and remain.
If you look at the mismatch between, for example, the deportation number orders being signed and those who are actually
being
deported.
I think what we've seen is a ramp up in terms of this. There's the extra, as you acknowledged yourself, the extra resources that have been provided and been put into it. And I think as the extra resources start to bear out, plus the processing times, which are being shortened, I think you will see a material effect there. And then the government has to move and has indicated its willingness that at that point then, when people have been refused a right to stay, they should move on. They should leave our country. And
But I mean, we were talking about years in the direct provision centres, people waiting years to be processed.
Yeah, and that timeline has come down substantially.
What is it now?
Well, my understanding is that it was, well, in the average case, and again, these figures change all the time, so I'm wary on this, but my understanding was it was 13, 14 months in terms of processing, and now in most cases, it is about 50% of that. So yes, it does take months. It does take months in terms of someone arriving, making appeals and everything else like that. But the very long is substantial times are no longer being seen. And we are seeing, therefore, if you bring that processing time down to a shorter period, you do see people. And people do, when they get their thing, they do leave.
Do we do about the open border?
Well, I think we have to be really careful about this. I mean, the solution that, you know, some parties, and I appreciate they're not here and maybe, you know, but there are some parties which are hinting that you should have a closed border or whatever. A closed border means that if you're going over to the UK and you're landing in Heathrow, that you could be queuing for 2 hours to show a passport or something like that. We have an open border which we've worked incredibly.
No, that's a bit disingenuous.
It's not.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board. In Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/brainstorm now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more brainstorming tools like private mode and voting. That's Miro.com/brainstorm now.
You can't get on an aircraft here. You shouldn't without a passport or an ID.
No, sorry, that's not the case.
You need an ID.
You need an ID to get on an airplane, not a passport to go to the UK. I mean, now Ryanair insists on a passport, but you can board an Aer Lingus plane with ID. That's the reality
and
of
what,
it.
That's
what an open border means, whether it's a driving license or whatever. That's what an open border means.
We are really talking about an open border where you can travel from the UK to Northern Ireland and you have any number of border crossings that are not policed. That's what an open border really means.
Yeah, a porous border, if you like.
Yeah,
but I mean, you just asked me a specific question, so just for clarification, because, you know, people ask that quite regularly, and there is a clear open, which we have worked to preserve and keep, because it's really important in the context of the structure of our island and what most people want to see in terms of their daily lives, in terms of movement between Northern Ireland, whatever. So therefore, it's up to the authorities on both sides of the border in Northern Ireland and in the Republic of Ireland to work together and to ensure that there are structures where if people are coming in and they are abusing that movement, that they are dealt with and they are processed. And I know that in Garda Síochána and the PSNI do have ways of working together on this, and I think that is important.
Jack?
But the preservation of the open border in terms of the border in Northern Ireland, or the movement between Ireland and the United Kingdom, is something that I certainly want to see preserved.
Jack?
I think all this chat about, you know, what are we going to do about the open border, it's something of a fallacy, to be frank. Like, I mean, we spent however many years during the Brexit wars arguing that the border, you know, was porous in its nature, and that politically, for a whole bunch of good reasons, we wanted that to remain the case. So, you know, the idea of sending extra Gardaí to the border, I mean, that just kind of plays into kind of right wing Tory media in the UK who love those kind of narratives, and they love to paint the Irish as you know, victims of some kind of Schadenfreude. But I think in a more realistic way, the underpinning problem here is the mismatch between the UK migration system, or rather the interaction between the UK migration system and the Irish / EU one. And since the UK left and has pursued, you know, very high-profile, controversial policies like the Rwanda policy, but not just Rwanda. They've also, for example, limited family reunification rights for lower-paid workers in the UK. And when you talk to officials in the Department of Justice, they suggest that is as big, if not bigger, factor for people coming here across the border from the UK.
What you're saying as Rwanda, if they are repatriated here, that they can then bring in endless family members. Is that what you're saying? And that's been stopped in the UK.
As with so many things, as I found with migration, there is an element of guesswork here, because you're talking about, you know, human movement, and the data is a bit loose because it generally relies on interview and it's hard to gather and so on and so forth. But the point I'm making is that while there is a kind of arbitrage opportunity, or maybe opportunity isn't the right word, but a capacity to arbitrage between the two jurisdictions, you'll get outworkings like this, like flows from the UK into Ireland. And the flows to the UK are actually increased as well since Brexit. So this is potentially just our slice of that larger number going to the UK, and indeed our slice, as Colin was saying, of larger worldwide patterns of migration. The answers here are not simple. And going on about an open border and, you know, can we do more checks crossing the border? I mean, we've heard this record before.
And that's the really important point that you made there. I think if you know, people go on about, well, the UK did this and the UK did that and they did whatever. End result was the number of people presenting themselves as arriving into the UK has gone up.
I think in an ideal world, you get closer linkage and cooperation between the UK and Ireland on migration issues. And I don't think that happens under the current Conservative government.
No, and I think Jennifer, that's absolutely what we need. We need grown-up politics here. We really do. And we need collaboration between ourselves and the UK. But I do also want to make a point that we should have, as a country, we should have been prepared for this, because the increased levels of immigration, they're coming here now, but other countries were facing this for the last number of years. And the fact that the government hasn't put the foundational processes and supports and infrastructure in place is completely unacceptable. And now I know we have a new Taoiseach, and he's taking it's not just, you know, ramping up of rhetoric, but actually his language has gone. I think parts of it can be quite inhumane. He was talking about the tents and not allowing them to fester. You know, this kind of language is not. I'm sorry.
That is not acceptable.
We're talking about humans, and the government has failed because every single person who is in a tent. It wasn't me who said it. It was the Taoiseach who said it. And every single person who's in a tent is there because the government has not put processes in place to deal with them.
Okay.
And the government
just
has actually admitted that it is actually illegal how they're being dealt with.
About providing substantial accommodation, Colin says on the text screen, substantial accommodation will just encourage more and more migrants. Surely that is blindingly obvious to you.
I don't know if I said substantive. I may have said substantive. What I mean is we need the reception centres. We need to be able to. So when people come here, they're, you know, they go to a reception centre, they go through the process, and, you know, if they're given leave to remain, they can stay, and then they're given the support. And if not, they're, you know, that they are.
I have a problem, and I've tremendous respect for Jennifer and so many things that she says and outlines, but with that type of idea that because somebody, because the Taoiseach or because anybody else takes actions, makes decisions, and talks about them, that suddenly they become inhuman or they become inhumane.
The word fester refers to an infection. The word fester refers to an infection. It is not an acceptable way to talk about people.
Can you just respect me enough to allow me to talk?
That's quite unusual. Usually it's
it's quite amazing because you're talking over me again. I mean, I just don't understand why you just don't let someone talk.
Or just say your piece.
So my piece is very simple. I think that you have to have an ability in this country for the people who want to deal with the issue and want to talk about it to be able to do so. And when you have people deciding, and I think it's a real lowball type stuff, to start attacking the Taoiseach, who has shown quite clearly that what he has from the day one of coming into the job has wanted a fair system, has wanted a firm system, and has wanted to deal with the issue. And he has not done anything except to acknowledge the fact that you must give recognition to those who want to stay and want to come to our country, who have a right to do that as a refugee, but you must process the other side. And I think trying to demonise, and there's a little snide little element of that in what you're saying there, is just totally unfair and unwarranted.
Taoiseach has talked about Sinn Féin need to be careful with their language on the use of open borders. Why doesn't that apply to him?
Well,
when
the Taoiseach
a word like fester, which the Taoiseach relates to an infection.
The Taoiseach is careful with his language, and I think the majority of people in this country recognise that he has done a very good job since he became Taoiseach, and particularly on addressing this issue.
Jack, is this an intractable problem in effect? I mean, if the 30,000 people arrive here this year, presumably 30,000 or more will arrive next year and beyond and beyond and beyond. And then if a fraction of them become entitled to residency here and more families, are we looking at the changing population of Ireland? You know, we had the Vikings, we had the Normans. Are we now going to have a whole new tranche of population?
There's some strange narratives out there around replacement theories and stuff that I think everyone should be a little bit careful of. I think we should also be careful about referring to problems as intractable. 30,000, no, but I think 15, 20,000 would bring us up to the kind of EU average level of migration and asylum seekers. And that is, it should be pointed out as well, a subset of migration, which is a bigger thing, much of which is welcome and needed within the broader society and economy that we live in. I think that we need to get better at handling this as a kind of core part of our politics. I mean, for a long time, the saliency of the migration issue for voters, going back to probably 20 years or so, it just kind of dropped off the face of a cliff, really. Combination of the McDougall referendum and the economic crash just made voters indifferent, I think, to migration. And then all of a sudden, our politics caught up with the rest of the EU, where this has been a massive issue for at least 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So we need to get ready for this being part of our politics, and our politics needs to get better at discussing it and handling it kind of soberly as well, because it's a live wire issue which is massively divisive.
But that is, I think, a really important point, because one of the bigger manifestations of Changed Ireland is actually legal migration, is what we all want to see, which is the people that man our health services, the people that do so many of the essential jobs in our country. And those people who are contributing, and indeed in a lot of instances, second generations, third generations, making a huge contribution to Ireland, standing for election, putting themselves forward. The whole way in which we handle the question of what we've been talking about impacts their lives probably more than any other people, because of the tonal change it has caused to come about in our country.
And I think it's not also just about the politics changing as well. I think it's also like we're becoming a wealthier country. So people, you know, we are now in a position, I think, and people will come to us more than previously. What I found very interesting was I was having a Twitter spat one day with some anti-immigration people, and it got to the point where they said, well, you're not Irish because my name was Whitmore. So they're saying, like, I came in through the time of the plantations, which I thought was hilarious. Yeah, exactly. So exactly, you know, who's Irish enough for some of these people?
All right. Look, we have to leave it there. My thanks very much to our Friday forum, Jennifer Whitmore, Jack Horgan-Jones and Colin Brophy. Thank you one and all. And that's all we have time for.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board. In Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/brainstorm now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more brainstorming tools like private mode and voting. That's Miro.com/brainstorm now.